Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Easter versus Passover when we come back. You know, Charles Lyell, one of the pillars of modern geology, published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people who believe them don't even know who it was that originated these ideas. But it's from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins has been devised by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. In that way, catastrophes like Noah's flood are strictly ruled out, and this process is called science. Now listen to this. The sun is shrinking. That was a Newswire report some years back, and it made that surprising statement. And it went on to say that the sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century, and scientists have been watching for over 100 years, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. So if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. And only 20 million years ago, the surface of the sun would be touching the Earth, or the Earth's orbit. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been consistent since the origin of the sun. Now, what did our teachers tell us about dinosaurs? Do you remember that? The extinction of the dinosaurs? Didn't that happen 65 million years ago? But if it happened 65 million years ago that the dinosaurs died out, and 20 million years ago the sun was 93 million miles in diameter, think about that. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on these kinds of pseudo-scientific lies. And this is just one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School that I conduct here at Isabella, Missouri, and on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and then click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the Passover. I received a letter in here the other day. It's dated 2206, so it's been 2 or 3 weeks ago. And he says, could you email me with the calculation for Passover this year and how you arrive at that particular time? Now, if I had to write a letter to somebody and explain the calculation for the Passover, I would be here, well, as dumb as I am, I would probably be here for 100 years, 5 or 6 anyway. So I went to a fellow by the name of R.A. Eckert, who actually wrote a 137-page treatise on this very subject. And I took you through a couple of chapters in that treatise and showed you how to calculate the first day. That's New Year's Day. That's the first day of the first month of the year, according to the God of Abraham. I know it's a wild concept, since there are so many calendars out there and so many different ideas that people have, so many various opinions and interpretations that people have of the Scripture. I thought it would be refreshing to just go to the Bible and see if we could figure that out. And I showed you that there was a code in the Bible. And remember, that was in Isaiah chapter 28, verses 9 through 13. And then I backed that up and I showed you how the Messiah spoke in parables in Matthew 13, verses about 1 through 20. And he said, now I'm speaking to you masses out there in parables, so that the prophecy in Isaiah 6 will come to pass, that you people hear my words and you see me speaking, but you don't understand a word that I'm telling you. And that's the way it's supposed to be, because I'm speaking to you in parables so you cannot understand. I know that doesn't fit with your theology, and it doesn't fit with Baptist and Catholic and other Christian ideologies, but I just wanted to rain on your parade and tell you that's what the Bible says, so don't get mad at me. I didn't write it. Now, this now brings us up to the Passover, and there are 53 things, 53 elements that we have to do in order to carry this Passover out. So last time, I took you through Exodus chapter 12 and the first few verses of chapter 13, and I showed you this is what the requirements are for doing the Passover, and I pointed out to you that the Jews don't do those 53 things. And Christians don't do those 53 things. In fact, the Christians don't even make any pretense of it. They just tell you plainly, we practice Easter, we do not practice the Passover. Now, the Jews do make a pretense of practicing the Passover. They actually have an observance. It's not on the day that the Bible tells you to do it, but at least they have a day. Now, there are a number of Christian organizations that do the same thing. Now, for instance, the Worldwide Church of God, I don't know where they are now, but there used to be an organization called the Worldwide Church of God, and they actually observed the Passover. Now, they didn't kill a lamb, and they didn't follow Exodus 12, but they did follow Matthew 26 in that they used the bread, the wine, the song, and the foot washing service, which is a requirement. It's an observance, but it doesn't carry out the instruction that we received, that we were told you're to do this forever. So they're not doing it forever, but they're doing it for a time. And they're doing some of it for a time, which is a step in the right direction. They don't practice Easter. Then there are a number of groups, little splinter groups around. I guess Worldwide Church of God is kind of a splinter group also. They've kind of fractionalized, and there's a number of those groups. But there's another group called Identity, and that's an offensive word to a lot of these people. They don't want to be called Identity, and Identity tends to refer to a radical fringe group of Christians that believe in the 12 tribes of Israel and that America and in Western Europe are descended from those. And so I've presented programs here in the past. For instance, a guy by the name of Stephen Collins wrote a number of books, 5 or 6 of them now. One of them is called The Lost 10 Tribes of Israel Found. And I don't think he's Identity, but I think that he's probably a Christian. He could even be a worldwide Christian. But he's pretty knowledgeable, and I've cited his books and I've promoted his books, and I couldn't find anything that was wrong with him. I did cover his last book, and I said I think he left out a vital chapter in here, and he probably did it for political reasons. And so for that purpose, I added in a segment there on Esau. But I have promoted this guy, Stephen Collins, because Collins has identified the 12 tribes of Israel here in the modern world. Whether he does the Passover or not, I can't tell you. Now, there's a third group called the Messianic Jews. Now, those are people that I don't know if they're Jews or descended from Esau or Jews or Judah or what their national identity might be. My son-in-law is a Messianic Jew, and he doesn't have anything to do with Judah per se. I don't know what tribe he's from, but the point I'm making is that Messianic Jews, some of them also practice the Passover. And one of them, if you can believe this, actually practices the Passover with the lamb. I don't know if there's more than one, but I ran across a Messianic Jewish rabbi in Tulsa, Oklahoma, some years back. And we got to talking, and when he mentioned Messianic Jew and the subject of Passover came up, he pointed out that they do it with the lamb. And I was really amazed, because not since 1919 had I heard of any organized religious groups that were keeping the Passover with the lamb. But here was one in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And when I asked him how they prepared the lamb, he said that they eviscerated the lamb and then put the heart and the liver and something else back into the cavity and cooked it with the lamb. Now, remember, we pointed out to you last time that you have to leave the guts in it. You don't eviscerate. You don't gut this lamb. You have to cook it with the intestines intact in the carcass. But other than that, you know, that one little item, and they did the bread and the wine and the song and the foot washing. And I forget now, I think they were keeping it on the crescent moon. I think they were making their calculations from the crescent moon. But they were making their calculations with the barley ears, but from the crescent moon. So I would say that they've just about got that thing wrapped up. I mean, there's a couple of little glitches in there that I noticed that scripturally shouldn't be there. And I ask him about that. You know, I asked him about that eviscerating the lamb, and he said, I know, but the people couldn't eat the lamb if it had the guts in it when it was being cooked. They had an aversion to that. And I thought to myself, oh, yeah, that's the way most people are. They have an aversion. You know, if God told you to stand up, you'd sit down. If he told you to sit down, you'd stand up. And if he told you to leave the guts in it, you'd gut it. And if he said gut it, you'd leave the guts in. I mean, it's been that way forever. It's nothing new. And I asked him about the crescent moon and the full moon, and he assured me that Hillel, the guy that made the calendar, the Jewish calendar, back about the 4th century A.D., had it right, and that the full moon was all wrong. And so I wasn't there to correct him. I was there to learn and to listen, and I learned and I listened and I found out what they do. And I would imagine there's probably some other groups around the country that probably practice the Passover also. I can tell you of a certainty. And this is a question that was asked of Elijah when Elijah was complaining to Big Mike. Yeah, this is Elijah. Back about 2 Kings 17, 18, 19, long in there, he was complaining to Big Mike that he was the last man in Israel that was practicing the law. And Big Mike assured him that no, he was not. That he had, this is Big Mike now, had reserved 7,000 in Israel who had not bowed their knee to Baal. 7,000. Now, boys and girls, I don't know of 7,000 people that have not bowed their knee to Baal here in the United States of America, but I can assure you that if there were 7,000 in ancient Israel, that Big Mike has reserved in this country 7,000 that have not bowed their knee to Baal. You can just about bet on that. So scattered around the United States of America, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what, there's some groups of you up in Canada and Australia and New Zealand and Western Europe, and probably scattered around in odd places around the world, where two or three are gathered in my name that are keeping the Passover with a Passover lamb. There are not many, but there's going to be a few, and when you add them all up, you're going to find a few thousand people around the world that actually obey God and keep His commandments. Now, I said last time we would take a look at this thing called Easter, because the great majority of people in the world do not practice the Passover. I mean, we're talking about a few thousand people probably worldwide. If you said, are there 100,000 people in the world out of 6 billion people that practice the Passover, I'd say no. No, I would find that hard to believe that there's 100,000. I would subscribe to 10 or 15,000 people around the world in little scattered groups that might be doing it. But how many people practice Easter? The whole Christian world, 1.3 billion people, one out of every 6 people drawing breath on planet Earth practice Easter. They're Christians and Christianity. And I don't care whether you're a Protestant Christian or a Catholic Christian or an independent Christian or a Baptist Christian or what kind of Christian you are, you practice Easter. And you got it right out of the Roman Empire. Now let's find out where you got this Easter idea. The English word Easter is derived from the name Easter, or E-O-S-T-R-E, probably Eoster, or E-A-S-T-R-E, Easter. Easter is none other than Astarte, or Ashtaroth, who was introduced into the British Isles by the Druids, and is just one more name for Beltis or Ishtar of the Babylonians. Many goddesses have displayed the same characteristics, all claiming the title Queen of Heaven. Now, you know, in the Catholic theology, Mary is the Queen of Heaven. Mary, the mother of Jesus, represents Astarte, the Queen of Heaven. Now in Judges 10 verse 6, we read this indictment. It says, the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Eternal, and they served Balaam and Ashtaroth and the gods of Syria and the gods of Zidon and the gods of Moab and the gods of the children of Ammon and the gods of the Philistines. And they forsook the Eternal and they served not him. Judges 10 verse 6. We Americans have done the same thing. We have brought people into this country from every country in the world. And we have welcomed them with their gods and with their pagan philosophies and ideologies as if we invented them ourselves. And we find Israelites all over America who are practicing transcendental meditation, and they have become Buddhists, and some very prominent movie stars and public figures have joined these various and sundry religious organizations from all over the world. And it isn't anything new. It isn't anything unusual. We Israelites have been doing that from day one. So that's normal for us. Now, Astarte, Ashtaroth, is the Queen of Heaven to whom the Canaanites had burned incense and poured out libations that we see in Jeremiah chapter 44. The Encyclopedia Britannica gives us a little piece on this. But before we get to that, let's take a look at Jeremiah 44, verses 17 through 19, where it says, but we will certainly do whatsoever thing goeth forth out of our own mouth to burn incense unto the Queen of Heaven, and to pour out drink offerings unto her, as we have done, we and our fathers, our kings, and our princes, in the cities of Judah, and in the streets of Jerusalem. For then had we plenty of victuals, and there, well, and saw no evil. But since we left off to burn incense to the Queen of Heaven, and to pour out drink offerings unto her, we have wanted in all things, and we have been consumed by the sword and by the famine, and when we burned incense to the Queen of Heaven, and poured out drink offerings unto her, did we make her cakes to worship her, and pour out drink offerings unto her, without our men? That's Jeremiah 44, verses 17 through 19. Notice, did we make her cakes to worship her? That's what hot cross buns are. And we do that to this day. And we love it. Don't let me get in the way of anybody's happiness and success. Astarte was worshipped in Egypt, Ugarit, and among the Hittites and in Canaan. Her Akkadian... Akkadian, A-K-K-A-D-I-A-N, Akkadian counterpart was Ishtar. Later, she became assimilated with the Egyptian deities Isis and Hathor. And in the Greco-Roman world, she was Aphrodite, Artemis, and Juno, all assuming the aspects of the Great Mother. You know, Mary, the Mother of God, Ashtaroth, Aphrodite. The archaeologist Layard, that explored Babylon and Nineveh, documents the worship of Astarte or Ishtar found on Assyrian artifacts. Easter was not considered a Christian festival until the 4th century. Early Christians celebrated Passover on the 14th day of the first month. The first month began on the first visible new moon after the vernal equinox. In the 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover, as we read in Leviticus 23, verse 5. A study of the dates on which Easter is celebrated will reveal that the celebration of Easter is not observed in accordance with the prescribed time for the observance of Passover. The Easter that we see in Acts 12, verse 4, which says, "And when he had apprehended them, he put him in prison and delivered him to four quaternions of soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people." Now, the word here, translated in the King James Version of the Bible, Easter, is actually the Greek word Pascha, P-A-S-C-H-A, or Passover. Easter is not another name for Passover. History reveals that the first month of the Israelite sacred year begins on the first visible new moon after the vernal equinox. Passover, 14 days later at even, Easter, is usually far from the true date for Passover. Now, you notice that this author, by the way, let me tell you who wrote this book. It's called Too Long in the Sun, and his name is Reeves, R-I-V-E-S. Let me see if I can help you a little bit more. You can probably get this book from, visit our website at www.toolong, that's TOOLONG.com. Or you could probably write to Partakers Publications, Post Office Box 23031, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28227. Again, that's Partakers Publications, Post Office Box 23031, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28227. Now, I've reviewed the book. It's a paperback. I don't know what the price of it is. 256 pages. Given to me by a fellow named Big John. And this guy, Big John, I met him down in Natchez, Mississippi. And I think he was an old worldwide guy. And pretty knowledgeable. He says, "Hey, let me give you this book here. I think you'll like this." And I picked up the book and I read it, and it's a pretty accurate book. And it's got a little section in here, chapter 11, on Easter. It's not very extensive, easy to read. And it's citing the scriptures in here that you'll be interested in to see that the Bible has a lot to say about Easter and Ashtaroth and this practice that we use to this day, and how we and our forefathers before us, our ancestors, have been pagan worshiping practitioners of Baal worship. That goes clear back to Egypt. That's where we learned it. And then after we got out of Egypt, we just couldn't wait to go back to it. And in the Babylonian captivity, we picked it up. And under Jeroboam, we just really got into it, hot and heavy. And remember, our people are the precursors, or the forerunners, or the posterity, I guess I should say, of the Druids. Posterity of the Druids, not the forerunners. And the Druids were pagans. I mean, they picked up this paganism, and we Americans and Canadians and Australians, we Israelites pick up on paganism. You know, like stepping into a pile of dog doo-doo. You know, it just sticks to you. You just can't get rid of it. So there you are. Now, Astarte was worshipped in Egypt. And Astarte was worshipped in Babylon, in Assyria, in Rome, and in Greece. Now, we don't call it Astarte anymore, or Ashtaroth. We've lost sight of those names. We call it Easter today. Just wanted you to know where the history of it comes from. Now, a study of the dates on which Easter is celebrated will reveal that the celebration of Easter is not observed in accordance with the prescribed time for the observance of Passover. So where does the date for the celebration of Easter come from? Well, the celebration of Easter was observed at different times by the Eastern and Western Roman Empire. In fact, Hillel II had changed the Jewish calendar prior to that time. And even today, Passover is not observed by Jews in accordance with biblical instruction as to timing. So the Jews do not calculate the Passover today the way the Bible tells us to calculate the Passover that we've already covered. And this guy figured that out, and he wrote it in his book. It's called Too Long in the Sun. Now, after much debate, the Nicene Council of 325 AD decreed that Easter should be celebrated on the first Sunday after the vernal equinox. This makes the date vary from March 22nd to April the 25th. Now, why was so much debate necessary if Easter was a tradition passed down from the apostles? The answer is that it was not an apostolic institution, but it is an invention of man. They had to make up some rules. Now, the historian Socrates said in the 5th century, "Thus much already laid down may seem a sufficient treatise to prove that the celebration of the feast of Easter began everywhere more of custom than by any commandment either of Christ or of the apostles." History records that spring festivals in honor of the pagan fertility goddess and the events associated with them were celebrated at the same time as Easter. In the year 399 AD, the Theodosian Code attempted to remove the pagan connotation from those events and banned their observance on Easter and Christmas. People still celebrated the pagan festival in honor of Issus, and they just called it something else, Easter. In the book on Roman time, the Codex Calendar of 354 AD, the author, Saltzman, states that many of the rites associated with Issus were retained in the Christian celebration of Easter. Now, in Matthew 15, verses 7 through 9, the Messiah said, "You hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, 'This people draws nigh unto me with their mouth, and they honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men.'" That's Matthew 15, 7 through 9. Hey, doesn't that fit Christianity today? He said, "You hypocrites, you know, you draw nigh to me with your lips." And you hear these preachers, "Oh, praise Jesus today." You ever heard that? I mean, they just get real, real excited about Jesus. But they won't do a damn thing he says. And that's why the Messiah made that observation in Luke 6, verse 46. He said, "Now why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not those things which I say?" Now Jesus practiced Passover. He didn't practice Easter. He wasn't practicing sun worship. Christians today are Baal worshipers. They are sun worshipers. And that's why the Jews are so adamant in their opposition to Christianity, and to their credit. They see Christianity for what it is. It is just paganism wrapped up in the Bible. And that's what really ticks them off, is that they've taken this paganism and wrapped it up in religion instead of wrapping it up in the law. But there's more. Now, there's a thing called Lent And there's no biblical authority for this celebration of Lent, which precedes Easter. Lent was an observance connected with Babylonian worship of Astarte or Ishtar, and it's been documented that the pagan celebration of Lent has been celebrated by many religions not even remotely associated with Christianity. This 40-day celebration was observed by the Yezidis, if that's the way to pronounce it, Y-E-Z-I-D-I-S, Yezidis, pagan devil worshippers of Kurdistan. Pagan devil worshippers of Kurdistan, who inherited it from the Babylonians. It was always, or it has always been, a celebration connected with sun worship, the spring equinox. Aztecs of Mexico, as well as the ancient Egyptians, both sun worshippers, celebrated the 40-day observance in honor of Adonis and Osiris, the sun god. And the historian Alexander Hislop states, among the pagans, this Lent seems to have been an indispensable preliminary to the great annual festival in commemoration of the death and resurrection of Tammuz, or Tammuz, which was celebrated by alternate weeping and rejoicing, and which, in being observed in Palestine and Assyria in June, therefore called the month of Tammuz in Egypt about the middle of May, and in Britain sometime in April. Hey, hang on a second. I got to give you a reminder. We'll be back with more on Easter and Lent and Tammuz and Passover when we come back. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log scheduled in archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. Just call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications so endorsed are going to recommend or endorse the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed in whole by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, and comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct 417-273-4967. Talking about Passover, we've covered Passover pretty well. We're going to talk about Easter. We got into this thing called Lent. We found out now that Easter is pagan. Lent was celebrated by the Egyptians, and clear over here in the New World by the Aztecs and other Indian tribes here in the New World. For thousands of years, what was their connection? Why, those people were practicing those pagan sun-worshipping beliefs before they left the Middle East and came to the New World. And they brought those pagan beliefs with them. Furthermore, they knew how to build pyramids because when they got over here to the New World, they built pyramids down in Mexico. South of Mexico City, there's two big pyramids down there, the Pyramid of the Sun, the Pyramid of the Moon, carbon copies of the pyramids of the Egyptians. Well, those people had some pretty high-level technology. Now, to conciliate the pagans to normal Christianity, Rome, pursuing its usual policy, took measures to get the Christian and pagan festivals amalgamated. And by a complicated but skillful adjustment of the calendar, it was found no difficult matter. In general, to get paganism and Christianity now far sunk into idolatry. In this, as in so many other things, to shake hands, that is, the pagans and the Christians. Now here we are with the Encyclopedia Britannica, which reconfirms the statements of Hyslop. The celebrations in March and April that marked the death of the god also seem to have been dramatically performed. Now in Ezekiel 8, verses 14 through 16, God tells us about abominations, and then, and greater abominations. Listen to this. Then he brought me to the door of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north, and behold, there sat women weeping for Tammuz. Then said he unto me, Hast you seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and you shall see greater abominations than these. And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men. All right, so here's 25 men, with their backs toward the temple of the Eternal, and their faces toward the east, and they worship the sun toward the east. You'll see that in Ezekiel 8, verses 14 through 16. Now, we Americans do that every Easter. We call it sunrise service. And we get up, and we face the east, and we worship the sun as it comes up. Isn't that just real special? But again, don't think that a thing strange. We Israelites have been giving the finger to our God for thousands of years. I mentioned that to you a little earlier. The Muslims do not give the finger to their God. In fact, they are very solicitous of the worship of Allah and Muhammad and their prophets and their God. And the Buddhists, they're very solicitous as to the welfare and the worship of their God. But not us. No. Now, we will worship any God that comes along. We're not particular. It just happens that if it's a sun god, we prefer those over moon gods and other gods, but we'll worship anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms, and it doesn't even have to be alive. We'll worship it if it's dead. We love it. So God took Ezekiel over and he says, hey, listen, see these people weeping for Tammuz? Hey, look at these abominations. So when you're out here worshiping the sun, you know, as it comes up next Easter, you want to remember that the God of Abraham calls that an abomination. It makes him want to puke. And then you want to remember that the next time there's a Hurricane Katrina, or there's an earthquake out in California, or there's a drought, or there's floods, which, by the way, he told you in Matthew 24, he said, you know, now listen, you people want to give me the finger, you know, you want to stick your finger in my eyeball. Now here's what I'm going to do to you. So if you'll take a look at Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, then those correlate with Revelation 6, Deuteronomy 28, and Leviticus 26. Can you remember that? I know it's a bunch. Write those down. You just write those chapters down. Next time you're worshiping the sun, the next time you're practicing Easter, the next time that you're eating a ham on Easter Sunday afternoon, or you're opening Christmas presents, and you're giving your God the finger, you want to remember these chapters. I'll run through them again. Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, three Gospels. John didn't have anything to say about it, but Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. Those correlate with Revelation chapter 6. You know, these four horsemen of the apocalypse? All right, now, you got those four down? Okay, now add two more to them. Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28. Those are the two penal clause chapters. This is what God says. You go out here and worship the sun, the moon, and the stars. Poke your finger in my eyeball and give me the finger and watch what I do to you. And Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita are just a couple of paybacks. And there's more to come. We ain't seen nothing yet. Wait until you get into Revelation 6. You ain't seen nothing yet. That's why I contend that, you know, it's time to grow up here, kids, and quit giving our God the finger. You know, maybe you don't want to practice the Passover, but at least quit practicing Easter. I mean, it would make more sense. Your mayor down in New Orleans, this mayor, is it Ray Nagel? Nagin, I think it is. He said the other day that he thought that maybe that Hurricane Katrina was retribution from God. He hit the nail right on the head. And then the next day, I don't know, some politicians must have got to that guy, because he had to recant. He had to renege. He had to say, oh, God, I was sorry as hell I said that. I didn't really mean that. See, that doesn't fit in with evolutionary philosophy. Evolutionary philosophy. That's just time and chance. Just a Category 5 just happened to hit New Orleans. Well, there's more to come. Hot cross buns of Easter. These people were in the temple of the Eternal, no doubt claiming to be his followers, just like Christians do today. They had combined pagan sun worship with the true worship of God, and practices that had never been prescribed as his worship. These were considered abominations. Now, does God accept pagan festivals as a part of his worship? The answer is no. And then we come to a thing here called the Great Tribulation. That's what we're getting ready for here, boys and girls, is the Great Tribulation. It's described in the New Testament as a terrifying future event, the likeness of which there has never been in the past. In the past, those who served other gods could not expect the God of the Bible to deliver them in a time of need. It will be vital for this generation, the generation of this great tribulation, to experience the guardianship of the God of Abraham. Non-biblical church tradition is based on the worship of the gods of the past. Will there be those who will once again hear and reply to the Creator? In Judges 10, verses 13 and 14, he says, "You go and cry unto the gods which you have chosen, and let them deliver you in the time of your tribulation." You know, he said the same thing over here in 1 Samuel chapter 8. You might want to write these two down. Judges 10, verses 13 and 14. And then in 1 Samuel chapter 8, he said, "You know, you'll cry out to me in that day. And when you do, I won't hear you." Now, you people down here on the Gulf Coast, I'll just bet you were just praying as fast as your lips could move when that hurricane was bearing down on you. And did you notice God did not hear you? See, I'm not Mayor Nagin, and I'm not running for public office, and I don't really care if I offend you or not. I'm just here to tell you that that's the way the game is played. I know it isn't kind and it ain't gentle, but it's the truth. Now, he also said the same thing here in Judges chapter 10, 13 and 14. Now, you people down there on the Gulf Coast, you need to start praying to those gods that you think can save you. Who do you think can save you out of the hand of the living God? You wanna worship the sun as it comes up this coming Easter down there in New Orleans? Hey, do you think Mardi Gras is gonna save you out of the hand of the living God? Why don't you give it a try? Why don't you build 4 more new casinos down there in Biloxi? Go ahead. Build 8 casinos instead of 4. See if you can't appeal to the God of luck next time around. Test it. Because that's what the God of the Bible is challenging you to do. He's kind of sticking his finger right in your eyeball. Let me read it to you again. He says to you people in Biloxi and New Orleans, go and cry unto the gods which you have chosen, Mardi Gras and luck, and let them deliver you in the time of your tribulation. Judges 10, verses 13 and 14. Now you got hot cross buns. In Jeremiah 7, verse 18, the children gather wood, and the fathers kindle the fire, and the women knead their dough to make cakes to the Queen of Heaven, and to pour out drink offerings unto other gods, and that they may provoke me to anger. Did you get that? That they may provoke me to anger. Did you think that making hot cross buns, boys and girls, was a cute little festival, and that coloring Easter eggs and putting them out there and teaching sexual perversion to your children was just kind of quaint and cute? You know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. I know that I won't, but I just thought I would remind you. So that when these tribulation, when these events of the Great Tribulation, Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, when you are enveloped in this Great Tribulation, at least you'll know why. It always helps if you know why something is coming down on you. At least at that point in time, you might be able to do something about it. You might be able to correct that deficiency if you knew why. If you knew that cigarette smoking causes cancer, you know, you might be able to do something about that at some point in time. But ignorance doesn't help you much. Easter eggs. God love this one. History records the words of Hyginus, H-Y-G-I-N-U-S, Hyginus, an Egyptian who was librarian at the Palestine Library in Rome during the time of Augustus Caesar. An egg of wondrous size is said to have fallen from heaven into the river Euphrates. The fishes rolled it to the bank, where the doves, having settled upon it and hatched it, out came Venus, who afterwards was called the Syrian goddess. That Syrian goddess, supposedly hatched from the egg, was Astarte, from whom the title Easter came. That's why you people practice Easter with Easter eggs. Now get this. This comes from paganism. An egg of wondrous size is said to have fallen from heaven into the river Euphrates. The fishes rolled it to the bank, where the doves, having settled upon it and hatched it, out came Venus, who afterwards was called the Syrian goddess. That Syrian goddess, supposedly hatched from the egg, was Astarte, from whom the title Easter came. And you teach this crap to your children? You laugh at, you ridicule, you make fun of the Bible. And you teach your children this kind of pagan, superstitious crap? And then you go to church, and then you worship the sun, the moon, and the stars, and call that religion. My, my, my. Like I said, the next time you get a Hurricane Katrina down there in New Orleans or on the Gulf Coast, at least you'll know why. Now, in conclusion, this pagan festival of Easter originated as the worship of the sun goddess, the Babylonian Queen of Heaven, who was later worshipped under many names including Ishtar, Sibyl, Adia, Mater, the Great Mother, or Astarte, for whom the celebration of Easter is named. Easter is not another name for the Feast of Passover, and it is not celebrated at the biblically prescribed time for Passover either. This pagan festival was Christianized several hundred years after Christ. And there's no biblical authority for the celebration of Easter either. Please consider the implications of following Scripture upon the church of today. God says, I am the eternal, and I change not. And even from the days of your fathers, you're gone away from my ordinances, and you have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Eternal of hosts. But you said, wherein shall we return? Malachi 3, verses 6 and 7. You know, to this day, we have turned away from our God and made fun of him, threw him out of our public schools. We have thrown our God out of our churches also. We won't practice anything that he tells us. We practice every pagan superstition and then teach that to our children as if it was truth and fact, like Santa Claus comes down the chimney. And yet when you look into the scripture, you read Genesis chapter 1 and you say, oh, that's just superstition. That's just nonsense. I think Genesis chapter 1 and 2 is easier to believe than that an egg fell out of the sky into the Euphrates River and was hatched by a bunch of doves. And out came the queen of heaven called Venus. Now, Genesis 1 and 2 may be a bunch of damn lies, but it's a hell of a lot more believable than that kind of crap. Hell, Genesis 1's got more science behind it than an egg falling out of the sky, for crying out loud. Or a fat man fitting down a 6-inch chimney into a hot oil furnace in Massachusetts in the wintertime. And you teach that to your children. Now the people had gone away from the ways of the Eternal, and he called for them to return. And they said, well, wherein shall we return? They did not think that they were doing anything wrong. You know, people today, they practice Christmas, Easter, and New Year's, and they go to church. 65% of Americans go to church. They don't see anything wrong with that. It's just as normal and just as logical and just as reasonable as it can be. The same thing's going on today as it has been for thousands of years. These same pagan practices are being proclaimed to be Christian. They're Christian in nature, and many think that there's nothing wrong with it. Once more, the God of Abraham pleads with his people to disassociate themselves with the Babylonian apostasy. Come out of her, my people, that you be not partaker of her sins, nor a participant in her plagues. Over in Revelation 18, verse 4, you know, God tells you very plainly, he says, you know, you guys are bringing this on yourself. What goes around comes around. You know, you want to poke your finger in my eyeball, okay. But there's going to be hell to pay when I come down there to visit New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. Again, and again, and again. This book, again, is called Too Long in the Sun. The guy's name is Reeves. I don't know what his first name is. It just says R-I-V-E-S in here. Let me give you his name and number again. Pretty good story. And he's got Christmas in here and all these, and the footnotes. You know, I ought to read you some of the footnotes, I guess. Just to let you know that the guy knows what he's talking about. The footnotes on Easter here. 1, 2, 3. God, this number 3 here is a long footnote. And then there's 2 pages of footnotes here. All kinds of neat sources in here. I mean, if you want to look up Christmas, just look it up in your, not Christmas, but Easter, just look it up in the encyclopedia. They'll tell you very plainly in the encyclopedia. They don't mince it. They'll just tell you, yeah, it's a pagan practice. If you like it, get after it. All right, now the last thing I need to cover here for you is this doctrine of the Passover. Now I'm down to about 3 or 4 minutes here. So let me flip over here to Passover. Now I published a book here, which is The Law on Passover. It's chapter 97 in the Mosaic Law book. in which I have code pled out all of the laws of the Bible. Can you believe that? Yes, sirree, Bob. I have code pled out every law. There's 133 of them. And they're divided into 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. And I put them in alphabetical order. So that you look at the first one. The first law in the Bible in alphabetical order is Aaronic priests. It's the laws that govern the Aaronic priesthood. And then a little later we come up to L for Levitical priests. And then we come to P for Passover. And then we come to S for Sabbath. And then we come to work and wages, which are at the very end. I think work is the last, number 133. There are laws in the Bible given to us by our Creator. And he said, now, these laws are kind of handy. And if you practice them, they produce a lot of money, a lot of wealth, a lot of happiness and success. And if you don't practice them, then they produce a lot of failure and misery and a lot of death and destruction and a lot of hate and discontent. And you're not going to be very, very happy. But then, you know, you got to make a choice. So in Deuteronomy chapter 30, he said, now I want you to choose you this day who you're going to serve, me or Baal. And we made our choice and we're serving Baal. Well, over here in chapter 97 on Passover, I have in this book all of the laws concerning the Passover. And it includes Luke 22, verses 1 through 20, and John 13, verses 1 through 17, and Mark 14, verses 1 through 26. And then Matthew 26, verses 1 through 30. And next time, I'm going to take you through those four books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, just as it relates to the Passover in the New Testament. Because, see, most Christians will say today, well, I follow the New Testament, but I don't follow the Old Testament. See, that was nailed to the cross with Jesus, and it was abolished and done away with. Okay, so I'm gonna leave you with Exodus 12, because I lost all you Christians back there. Now, let's take a look at Passover in the New Testament, and let's see what Jesus and the apostles did. I know it's a wild new concept, but let's entertain that next time. And we're going to find out next time that Jesus added four requirements to those 53. Remember that I told you about those 53? Well, there's four more. You now have to use this bread and wine. And then there's the foot washing. Remember, he was sitting down there with Peter and he says, here, Pete, let me wash your feet. And Pete said, no, you'll never wash my feet. And so the Messiah said to him, he said, well, Pete, if I don't wash your feet, you're not going to have any part with me. And Peter said, well, in that case, then I guess maybe you can wash my feet. And so the Messiah washed his feet and he said, now you don't understand what I'm doing right now. But in the future, you're going to understand what this symbolizes and what this is all about. And next time I'm going to show you what this washing of feet and doing this bread and wine, commonly in Christian circles called communion, is all about. Why do you do this thing? Where did this idea of communion come from? And where did this bread and wine, and where did this foot washing and the singing of this song come from? And we'll cover that next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.